to the Winnow, a podcast about dining in the South and beyond. I'm Robert Moss, the author of Barbecue, the History of an American Institution.
And I'm Hannah Raskin, food editor at the Post and Courier.
Well, today we're doing the divisive foodstuffs edition of the Winnow because we're going to talk about some dairy foods that people have strong opinions about, either you love it or you hate it type of things, all sort of related, I think, in this case, to sandwiches or things that you might eat with a sandwich. But before I dive in, I want to say that this topic came to me I was inspired by reading the new Post and Courier Food Facebook group, which I believe you guys just launched, Hannah.
I owe a debt of gratitude to the folks at the Times Picayune. They started a Facebook group, which has been really successful. So Todd Price kind of walked us through how we could start a Facebook group too. And we're just now getting going. But the idea is, you know, to really have a community of people who are interested in food here locally so we can kind of trade tips and ask questions. Both Stephanie Barna, our food writer, and I are active on that, which is new for me. I've never been on Facebook, but I'm there for the group. So I hope everyone else this too.
So if people want to find
I'm not a Facebook expert. So it's a group called Post and Courier Food.
I just always go to the search bar and type in Post and Courier Food.
Should get you there. Yep.
So I'm sure there's some URL that has with
I'm sure there's a fancy way, but type it in and let me know if you can't find it.
Well, these items all came from Post and in the
Facebook, so
which was posting the links to various articles and then a lot of comments from the group going back and forth on them. The one that caught my eye, this was a couple weeks ago. The article came out a couple weeks ago. It's called the topic is, the question is, are millennials ruining mayonnaise? And I think the actual headline of this is actually not are they, it's not a question, it's a declarative, how millennials killed mayonnaise.
I gotta tell you, I made it through only the first few paragraphs of that story, and it wasn't just because I'm tired of hearing this millennials killed trope. Why don't you fill us in on what they've done?
Yeah, so this is Sandy Held a Handbasket Hingston from the Philadelphia Magazine.
Her name is Helena Handbasket.
No. So this is Sandy Hingston. I like to think of her as Sandy Hell in a Handbasket Hingston with Philadelphia Magazine because this is not the first article she's written decrying millennials and how they're ruining everything.
Do we know how old she is?
She is not a millennial. Okay. She is a good bit older. There's a article that I knew I recognized the name. I'm back. There was this article in 2016 called "How Millennials Are Ruining the Workforce."
Oh,
and it's your typical
old
person.
Well
yeah, kids these days are lazy. They don't want to work. I think, if I recall vaguely, she felt like they were making fun of her when she brought her old-fashioned books and printed newspapers into the office.
I'm so curious now, though, if this woman is 90 or if she's older than all millennials. That would be great. She's just.
But the piece basically claims that millennials are no longer eating mayonnaise, but that's not just a trend, but they're turning their backs on this great American condiment.
And is there actual evidence for this?
Yeah, so is there any evidence here?
Right.
Well, the whole piece opens with a long anecdote, really, about a family gathering with her family, and all these young family members wouldn't eat the Waldorf salad and all these other things that her mom had been making for years and years and years. And
let's just say these are two separate issues. Do you like mayonnaise and do you
like
Waldorf salad?
I can understand people turning down a Waldorf salad. Yep. Especially doesn't have celery in it. I mean, so maybe it's the celery.
Right.
Maybe it has nothing to do with the mayonnaise. Then she interviews
Watergate salad.
So she uses her own personal family, her two children, one that loves mayonnaise and one doesn't. And then, so basically that's conclusive. At the very end, the most interesting thing about it is that undercuts her whole argument by citing this poll from the Association of Dressing and Sauces, which came out in 2015 with the headline, "Millennials Love Mayo." And so this poll interviewed ages 25 to 34 are the most frequent purchasers of mayonnaise. So basically her anecdote then is offset by the poll, but she sort of writes it off by saying at the end, the Association for Dressing and Sauces was founded as the Mayonnaise Products Manufacturers Association and changed the name. So somehow that therefore undercuts the evidence.
look, like I said, I only read 8% of the story.
You shouldn't have read that far.
That's all I read. But it sounds like maybe her argument is that millennials are using mayonnaise in different ways than she approves of. Then maybe they're not having a Waldorf style, but I'm telling you, go into any sandwich shop and they have seven different kinds of mayonnaise.
Yeah,
you can get Chipotle mayonnaise and Sriracha mayonnaise and extra garlic aioli. I mean, I don't know what she's talking about. Yep. I have not noticed a shortage of mayonnaise. I have not. Now, I understand what she's talking about, that people don't like mayonnaise. That has always been the case.
And that's where this goes into the divisive food category. Because I remember very clearly when I was about college age, I had a good friend who called mayonnaise devil's vomit, couldn't stand it.
I'm quite confident that by this point in the show, my husband has turned it off because he can't even listen to the word. He really despises mayonnaise.
And it's long been that way. It's just one of those kind of things that some people just love it, and some people just like that. That's the texture, that's the only way I think about it.
People will say texture. Look, I do think that this is one of those things that probably does have some sort of scientific explanation. We're talking about eggs, which are dangerous. And so the idea that you would be turned off by mayonnaise probably does have some evolutionary explanation. I mean, eating a raw egg is not a great move, generally.
But at the same time, we've talked before about the love for Duke's mayonnaise that is throughout the South. So at the same time, you have people who swear by it.
Right. But I'm saying of all the foods you might put on your I don't want to go near that list, I think there's at least some kind of explanation for this one. A little bit.
Maybe.
I love it, but...
I think the whole article is pretty funny. I think one of the things that she's doing is really, really radically misunderstanding a part of like millennial internet culture, which is to kind of have these like fake funny controversies.
I see.
So she's like point. She basically thinks that mayonnaise is like wrapped up in this progressive crusade against like traditional white things, like things associated with white culture, right? I mean, that's kind of like a Twitter joke, you know? It's just kind of like, yeah, people kind of hate on mayonnaise because it's like associated with like bland, you know, like white people food and everything, and it. And that's not real, though. Let's just
if we're talking about it at all, let's be clear. It is not just white people who use mayonnaise.
Right, of course not.
It's a Mexican tradition to put it on corn. Just to be clear. Yes.
It's just kind of like a bit people do on Twitter. Pretend to be really, really angry about mayonnaise. Yeah, right.
She also called out in her article like two or three like BuzzFeed type stories called, you know, with these splashy headlines like mayonnaise is the absolute worst thing on earth.
Right.
The over the top kind of condemnation of certain foods that you'll get from people sometimes.
Well, I gotta say, I actually, as someone married to a mayonnaise hater, I kind of feel badly for him about this story because it sounds so awful. I'm sure it set back the cause of mayonnaise hatred, which we've said is well established.
Yes. Though I thought it was curious. So I went to dig in and say, okay, so what's really going on? Is mayonnaise, are millennials actually killing mayonnaise? Is it going down? It's surprisingly hard to get good statistics on mayonnaise sales. Mm. You quickly find sites like these food research companies that will, for a few thousand dollars, will sell you the industry trend studies. But I thought what was curious, about this time last year, there was a big shocking news coming out of Britain, which was that mayonnaise was overtaking ketchup
as the
condiment of choice. The mayo sales rose 6.9%. Ketchup had plunged 2%. With mayo, eclipsing ketchup for the first time, as they sort of teed it this sort of Brexit way as like this French thing eclipsing the
classic British condiment.
Well,
and we've talked before about the mayonnaise ketchup combo, right? Yes. That we've seen that now
Must
bottled
chop
and sold,
or
exactly,
whatever it's
exactly.
Called.
Look, I didn't read the article. I don't know if this is in there or not. But if there's anything that millennials have done that's hurt mayonnaise, I guess, just to be fair about this, there has been that whole vegan movement, which probably is more millennial than other generations. And we have seen the fight over labeling in mayonnaise.
Over just mayo.
Exactly.
Which is a no-egg mayonnaise.
The idea is that if there is a market for this product without eggs, that could be millennial-ish.
Yep.
I don't think it's killing mayonnaise. No. I mean, clearly they love mayonnaise so much they want it even without the
and
eggs.
The best I could find is some statistics. It looked like mayonnaise sales were pretty much flat from 2000 to 2005, and then it's actually we're increasing up through. I haven't seen the last couple of years, but at least through 2015, mayo is actually going up. So if millennials are killing it, they're killing it very, very slowly. If you talk about other foods that I think people can be divisive, and maybe this would go on a sandwich with your mayonnaise, iceberg lettuce, which is another topic that actually this one appeared also in the Post and Courier food Facebook group. Back in early August, Helen Rosner did a short piece in The New Yorker called "It's Time to Admit That Iceberg is a Superior Lettuce." So putting her sort of stake in the ground on the side of iceberg lettuce. And she's sort of saying iceberg's gotten a bad rap, that people will call it flavorless and sort of this, it's sort of like mayo in that sort of plain white bread kind of world. And it's truly true, in especially the 80s, 90s, and then into the 2000s. It used to be iceberg lettuce was about the only thing in grocery stores. Then it's been eclipsed by leaf lettuce and romaine and then frisée and now kale and all these other greener, fluffier leaves and that kind of thing. Rosner says, no, it's a wonderful thing. It's not flavorless. It's crisp. And she sort of goes to bat for it, making like a cold iceberg lettuce soup. She has a recipe for that, I think. You can braise it. You can grill it. Lots of things you can do with it. You can pickle it.
You can cut a wedge out of it and put blue cheese dressing
on
it.
And that's actually where I was going to ask come down the side. Because she does then cite the wedge salad, the infamous wedge salad. And that seems to be a divisive one. What are your feelings on the wedge salad?
Oh, I love it.
Love it?
Yeah, I can't imagine anyone not loving it.
I think some people don't because it's just this big quarter.
Just because of the shape and size of it.
And you're like slicing into a big old thing of lettuce and all that kind of stuff.
But it's covered in blue cheese.
Yes, blue cheese and bacon usually. Bacon. Yeah.
Yeah. So it is sort of that. I'll even eat the tomatoes on that salad. And usually salad tomatoes, I'm like, nah, I don't know, I'll just move this aside. But I love wedge salad.
Yeah, Rosner in her piece calls it, it says, a wedge is a brash used car salesman of a salad, a primal dish, a rare thing for a plate of raw greens to be. Which I think is praise
for
brash used car salesman. But it definitely is that. It's definitely punch you in the face with flavor kind of dish.
Once again, I'm totally unprepared. I didn't read the story, although I'm aware of it. I would guess that the people who are anti-iceberg, it's because it's mostly water. Is that the complaint?
It's mostly water. It doesn't have flavor.
It has no nutrients.
It's bland, very few nutrients. Right. There was a book that came out back in the 70s called The Taste of America. It was John Hess and Karen Hess who basically took the task, the American industrial food system. It was one of the first attacks on it. Right. The same era that Alice Waters was about to come along. And they just railed on iceberg lettuce as sort of like just classic 20th century industrial food raised so it could be transported easily, which it is. It's very hardy.
Yeah.
It stands up
for
transport, very, very round. But then just derided as being terribly flavorless, no nutrients, comparing it to like all the old lettuces from the 20th century or the 19th century that it replaced. And certainly that's true. If you just have a salad, like how many salads have you had in your life that's just chopped up iceberg lettuce with maybe a little bit of like purple cabbage or carrot.
Right.
One sad tomato,
croutons.
A couple of croutons and that, they're like a crap ton of creamy dressing. Yeah, that's not using really iceberg for its best. I happen to be a big fan of iceberg lettuce in the right context. I think if you're going to if you slice it really thin, like shave it almost and put it on a sandwich, it has great crispness to it. It's excellent for wrapping things up.
And the name is apt. Like it does carry that coldness in a really nice way.
It definitely does.
Yeah.
So
I'm all for it. Look, I'm sorry for those people that had nothing but iceberg. That's sad. It's really
nice
to have.
I think it's good that you can go to the supermarket and you have lots of lettuces.
Exactly. So I'm not saying we should return to a time of only iceberg. I think all the lettuces have merit, including iceberg.
Yeah, but if it comes to a sandwich like a burger or something, don't give me a green leaf lettuce. It just wilts and just sits there. You want something with some crispness that can stand up.
Yeah, but if you're going
to
use iceberg, don't use that bad part where it's like down from the bottom of the stem where it's all browny and you just get
You got to put on a big slicer and slice it really thin, so it's like little strips and they're crisp, and that's a perfect topping for a sandwich. So I'm all for bringing back the iceberg in the proper context. All right, and I think we had one more. This is sort of a sandwich related one as well that you
it's
brought
a pickle
to the table here. Yeah. It's a real pickle of a question.
Our friend is in a pickle. Chris Wilkins, who is a listener of this podcast and also was a guest at one point.
He joined us right before he was departing for Atlanta.
That's right. So he was the baker here in Charleston at Root Baking, and that has segued into a different baking company so that he could go to Atlanta and sell among other things, sandwiches. And so he was curious. He asked me whether a sandwich is a sandwich if it arrives alone on the plate. Or do you, as an eater, feel that the sandwich is incomplete without either chips or a pickle or something alongside?
I would agree. Well, it's still a sandwich, but I feel like it's incomplete. Like if I go into any kind of – maybe it's different if it's like some – grab and go takeaway cart or something like that. But if you're at a sit down restaurant with a menu that has a sandwich section, you wouldn't expect to order and just have a plate show up with just the sandwich. At least I wouldn't.
I even remember just growing up, and I don't know if parents still do this, but even if they were making a peanut butter sandwich, there was always like a couple Frito-Lay chips
alongside
that. Yeah,
you need something with it.
Always, by the time you put it on a plate, you need something with it. And as I was saying, Chris, too often what you're putting with it is something you might otherwise just put on it. You know, I mean, you're taking like coleslaw, you can put it in there, you can put it on the side, but I a sandwich by itself just seems...
And I think a sandwich with some chips or something like that, those are salty and crisp. And a pickle is nice because it's that sour, tart. It's a nice accompaniment to balance things out. I'm a big fan of putting pickles with sandwich. In fact, I keep a jar of kosher spears in my refrigerator at home, and I'll just put one next to a sandwich when I make my own plate.
Exactly.
Because it does. It looks so
like
bare
going
and
out
lonely.
Without a hat.
Yes. Absolutely.
You really need to have something. All right. So this may not be as divisive an issue.
We're not between us two, but I guarantee you there are people out there who have no truck with dill pickles and feel like it's a waste
I
and don't
want
to have to pay for all that garbage.
Somebody could raise the food waste issue and say, look, I'm not going to touch this. I'm just going to throw it away. Why
and certainly a lot of
there?
Pickles, fears put on the side of a sandwich will sit there and go in the trash.
Right.
People won't eat them. My son, who's 12 now, but when he was a little bit younger, he just loved the pickles. And so anybody at the table who wouldn't eat the dill pickle, he'd get them. He'd eat like four or five if he had a family member. So he loved them. And in fact, he'll order pickles. He'll ask now when he orders something, does it come with a pickle? And a lot of times it won't. And so he'll say, can I get a pickle on the side?
When you said order pickles, it reminded me when I was a kid, my brother and I mail ordered pickles. We were so into it. And this was, you know, before the internet, obviously. And I don't know. We must have looked it up.
Were they special pickles?
They were. Well, I sort of feel like we got them from New York. You know, we lived in Michigan. I wonder if it's like we saw something in the Times or the New Yorker. So you remember the New Yorker. Mm-hmm. I said those tiny little ads. And I think it may have been like right away for your, you know, gallon jar of pickles. So
how were they? Do you remember?
They were quite good. And I think we got sour tomatoes as well, which is a totally underrated pickle. I love a green tomato pickle. That is delicious.
I remember the first time I went to Katz's Deli in New York. And this was when I was probably just for, you know, right out of college or grad school. So, you know, long before the food revolution, I just remember the pickles that came just sort of with the meal. It was just this interesting, weird, they're different flavors. They're all anything like the pickles you get in a jar. And I really loved them.
Yeah, they're pretty exciting. But I don't know. I guess once you get a pickled tomato, now I'll eat it like an apple. I think it's delicious. I don't think it would go with a sandwich. Like that, it just seems like a whole other experience.
That seems like a condiment plate or something that needs
to be. Although you could slice it and make it into a sandwich. You could certainly have a pickled green tomato sandwich.
I suppose. Better than a fried green tomato sandwich. I'm on the record for my loathing of
fried green tomatoes. I hate fried green tomatoes. But I think, though, actually that brings something up about your time at the various flavors and the pickling and putting it on a sandwich. I think that is one issue now, pairing your sandwich with chips, is chips come in so many crazy flavors.
Yeah,
so they always say over here at Mercantile, which is the Indigo Road place, like, okay, you got your sandwich, pick out your chips. And you look, and you're like, I can't even match the flavor. Like, you need a chef, pairing this.
Can you pair my chips?
Exactly, like a wine menu.
I'm still just a old-fashioned plain potatoes. Chips. I don't mind thin cut. They could be the ruffled ridges kind. I don't really mind, but I don't need a bunch of flavors blown onto it because the sandwich has the flavor. The chips have a little salty crunch to go with it, and you know, you go back and forth. maybe this is a divisive issue because I get into this with both my wife and kids. I like to eat a little bit of sandwich, a little bit of chips, bite a pickle, and go around. They would invariably eat all the chips.
Oh.
And then eat the sandwich.
Oh,
and then maybe eat the pickle or in some other random order. But they are like, I eat every, or you know, if there's three things to play, I'm going to eat all of one thing.
Right.
And then all of the next.
Right.
I know we're, if you come down on one side or another of the
I would
food
go back
order,
and forth, like whatever you feel in the mood for right at that moment, right?
Particularly if they balance each other. That's why I like to have a little bit of everything.
Exactly.
I don't want to just go around the circle, around
That's
the plate.
Really interesting.
Everything.
Do they do that with like an entree as well?
I think it depends on what it is.
Okay.
But oftentimes, yeah, they will eat, if there's mashed potatoes on the plate.
Yeah.
With a, you know, whatever, a, you know, let's say we have steak, mashed potatoes, and green beans. They'll eat all the mashed potatoes.
Wow.
Before tucking in the steak. Like, what are you doing?
That's a really interesting method.
I always will do one bite of each and go around.
So. I'm with you.
I'm not methodical. But I may do two bites of steak and then a bite of potatoes and then two more. Yeah. But I like to mix it up.
Great.
That is all for this edition of The Winnow. We recorded today's episode in the Sandwiched Podcasting Studios at the Post and Courier Building in downtown Charleston, South Carolina. If you enjoy listening to The Winnow, help other listeners find us too. Just go to iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you access your podcasts and like us or leave a rating. The Winnow is a production of the Post and Courier and Palmetto New Media. Our producer today was the...
Never divisive. He's
never divisive. J. Emery Parker. Our theme music is by the Bluestone Ramblers.
Until next time, I'm Robert Moss.
And I'm Hannah Raskin.
Now get out there and eat.